Kann eine Karriere neugierig sein? Komm zu EY und erlebe es selbst. Arbeite an spannenden Projekten, gestalte die Wirtschaft von morgen und entwickle dich auch selbst weiter. Im Team Assurance, Tax, Consulting oder EY Parthenon, Strategy and Transactions. Shape your future with confidence. Jetzt bewerben auf jobsgermany.ey.com. Kann eine Karriere neugierig sein? Komm zu EY und erlebe es selbst. Arbeite an spannenden Projekten, gestalte die Wirtschaft von morgen und entwickle dich auch selbst weiter. Im Team Assurance, Tax, Consulting oder EY Parthenon, Strategy and Transactions. Shape your future with confidence. Jetzt bewerben auf jobsgermany.ey.com.
It budges slightly, and I could definitely get the door open if I pulled on it hard enough, but that'll outright destroy the lock. I spoke into the phone that was tucked between my cheek and shoulder while standing in front of the glass sliding door in my kitchen. Yeah, long as it's closed, especially in this weather, it'll be fine for tonight. Just leave it be until I come tomorrow, replied my friend Carl, who also happened to be a locksmith. I'll try to be at your place first thing in the morning. Early that day, the lock of my kitchen's glass sliding door broke, making it completely unusable. After being unable to fix the lock myself, I wound up calling Carl, all the while keeping an eye on the casserole I had put in the oven that was close to being ready. I was expecting my friend, Darren, and his girlfriend, Trisha, over for dinner. They celebrated Darren's 30th birthday the previous week, and I unfortunately was travelling for work. I figured this little home-cooked dinner was the least I could do for missing my friend's special day. I looked at the oven clock and saw it was 8:40. They were 40 minutes late. This was back in the 90s, when cell phones weren't mainstream like they were today, so I couldn't just text one of them to see why they were taking so long. Their tardiness actually wound up working out for two reasons. I was able to speak with Carl about the glass sliding door, and preparing the casserole took a lot longer than I expected. If Darren and Trisha arrived at 8 on the dot, dinner would have been way behind schedule. The biggest inconvenience about the glass sliding door's broken lock was my access to the storage shed, where I kept my wine, preservatives, and other non-perishable foods. The shed was literally a few steps outside from the kitchen. However, I now had to go through the front door, walk around the house, and into the backyard if I wanted something from the shed. Being midwinter, 2 days after the ground was coated with 4 to 5 inches of snow, didn't make matters any easier. After hanging up with Carl, I saw there was still a few minutes left on the timer, and I realized I forgot to get a bottle from the shed. Darren and Trish weren't big wine drinkers anyway, and my refrigerator was stocked with their preferred beverages like soda and beer. But presentation was always important to me, and I always felt a bottle of wine was quintessential to the perfect dinner spread. I already made a few trips to the shed earlier this evening when there was still a little light out, and soured at the thought of bundling up to make another, since it was now a lot colder and icier outside. Everything else was done. The table was set, side dishes and dessert were prepared, and the casserole would be ready any minute. It was ironic, I thought. I was so worried about not having everything done by 8 o'clock. Now I was concerned over whether the food would be cold by the time Darren and Trish arrived. I considered giving them a call, but decided to wait 20 more minutes. I went to the front door so I could turn on the outside lights. Flipping the switches, I nodded affirmingly when I saw the lights turn on from one of the windows and opened the door to make sure the front pathway was properly illuminated. I gasped and almost stumbled back when I found Darren on my front porch, standing no less than an inch away from the doorway. He wore his dark grey sports jacket, along with a green and black plaid shirt tucked into a pair of wrinkled beige khakis and black dress shoes. His brown hair was combed to the side, and he looked noticeably pale, like all the colour was drained from his face. Darren wore this timid, awkward expression, his lips tightly pursed and green eyes appearing larger than they were by the lenses of his circular black-framed glasses. Darren stood, completely straight, arms at his side, and was staring intently at the overhead light before redirecting his attention to me. "Hello, Parker," Darren said in this robotic, monotonic voice, a stark contrast to his typical vivacious persona. "I am here, at your house, for dinner tonight." I raised an eyebrow at Darren's upright persona, unsure if something was amiss, or he was doing some kind of bit. "I was getting worried about you guys," I replied, trying not to make it obvious I noticed something was off about him tonight. "Where's Trish?" "Trish is still in the car. She needs help bringing something inside the house. It is a gift for you, Parker. Can you come outside to help Trish, my girlfriend?" I grimaced when Darren, who started growing a little restless standing in place, asked me to step outside. I had no desire to throw on my two coats and snow boots, especially when the driveway was on the side of the house. I was about to reluctantly agree when I heard the oven's ding, signifying the casserole was ready. Saved by the bell. "Let me get the casserole out of the oven and cut it up first. Why don't you come in and warm up?" I asked, gesturing for Darren to step inside. Darren's wide-eyed expression started showing some unease. He said nothing for a few seconds, before slowly poking his head inside the house and looking around, like a pet surveying the surroundings when entering their new home for the first time. "Are you sure?" Darren asked, with some slight apprehension in his voice. I stared at him for a second or two, waiting for Darren to start cracking up. He didn't. "Of course, Darren. What do you think I'm gonna do? Make you eat dinner out in the freezing cold?" "I think you should come outside," Darren weakly replied. "Come on." I put my arm on Darren's shoulder and ushered him inside, out of the cold. "Help me with the casserole. It'll take 2 seconds." Darren tentatively let me guide him in, after which I shut the screen door and brought my friend into the kitchen. He looked very stiff and uncomfortable, taking shovel-like steps compared to my full strides. Darren kept looking at the ceiling and seemed unnerved or spooked by something as he ventured farther from the front door. I pulled out a chair from the kitchen table for Darren to sit in before opening the oven. The blast of heat felt quite nice after being subjected to the frigid, icy outside air. Using an oven mitt and dish towel, I took out the casserole and set the glass pan on top of the stove for it to cool. Turning back, Darren remained standing, completely upright, arms pressed firmly at his sides as he shifted between staring anxiously at me and gazing at the ceiling. "I got the beer you like, so help yourself," I said, nodding at the refrigerator as I retrieved a knife to cut the casserole. I was about to start cutting the casserole, but realized I forgot to set the dishes on the table. "You mind cutting the casserole?" I asked Darren as I walked up to him and held out the kitchen knife for him to take. "I just want to bring the sides to the table." After a few seconds, Darren slowly took the knife from me and looked at it wondrously, like this was the first time he ever saw one. I noticed beads of sweat were forming across Darren's forehead, and his hand, which I brushed against when handing him the knife, felt incredibly cold and clammy. "What's the matter?" I asked when Darren didn't say anything at first. "And what took you guys so long to get here?" Darren's lips remained sealed as he followed me to the stove. He stood motionless in front of the casserole, the hand holding the knife firmly pressed back against his side with the blade pointed towards the floor. "I really think you should come outside," Darren said again, staring at the casserole and giving it a repulsed look like a child sitting before a plate of Brussels sprouts. I wasn't concerned yet, but was trying to figure out what was up with Darren. Maybe him and Trish had a fight? Did something happen before they came here? Was something on his mind? Trying to maintain a positive vibe, I smiled and lightly patted Darren on the back. "Just cut up the casserole and let me bring these sides to the table. Then I'll help Trish outside," I said, while gesturing toward a bowl of mashed potatoes, another filled with peas, and a small tray of asparagus. Darren slowly turned his head and stared at the glass sliding door for a few seconds before turning back to me. You can get outside quickly through the kitchen door, then the front door, Darren said, in a slightly encouraging tone. Locks broke, I replied, as I tried figuring out how to hold all three sides when transporting them to the table. I wondered why Darren was so short-worded, yet so insistent on getting me to go outside with him. After setting the sides on the table, I returned to the kitchen. Darren remained standing over the stove, his entire face and hands dripping with sweat, and parts of his skin had a reddish-pink tint, vaguely resembling a sunburn. There were sweat marks under his arms and dark patches forming across his pants and shirt. He continued staring back and forth between the casserole and ceiling, looking like he was being extremely careful and precise with his head movements. He had this look of sickliness and trepidation across his face that was emphasized by his tense posture, appearing afraid to so much as nudge an inch from where he stood. "Darren, what the hell's going on?" I asked with visible concern as I hurried over to where he stood. "You don't look good, like, at all, dude." Darren's glossy, bloodshot eyes still widened, which were filled with panic-like terror and dismay, now had greyish red circles forming around them, along with some slight swelling. "Can we just go outside?" Darren gasped, releasing his grip on the knife that made a high-pitched clang when it hit the floor. "You don't look well, Darren. Let's sit you down and get you some water," I replied, putting my arm around his shoulder. Darren was so stiff, I had to actually yank him away before getting him to his seat. "Just sit down, Darren. I'll go get Trish," I said, having to force him in a seated position on the chair. Although the expression on Darren's face didn't change, his eyes flared, indicating he was in some sort of excruciating pain or alarming state of mind. Soon as I sat Darren down and pushed his back against the chair, I heard a wet tearing sound come from his backside. I would have acknowledged it more if my hands and forearms didn't get coated with sweat from touching him, and I was unnerved at how unusually tight and firm his skin felt. A trail of perspiration was smeared across the floor from the stove to Darren's seat, and continued seeping from his skin as it started to pool around the chair. He continued looking up at the ceiling, the worry and agony in his face intensifying. "Just come outside with me, please," Darren yet again mumbled. "I'm calling the paramedics first," I said, making sure Darren wasn't going anywhere, before I rushed into the living room, which had the nearest phone. "Just stay there, Darren. I'll go get Trish." I was about to reach for the phone when it rang. I froze at first, staring at the phone as the ringtone's rhythmic bleeps blared a second and third time before finally answering. "Parker?" I instantly recognized Carl's voice. "Where are you right now?" "I'm home. I've got a situation right now, though, Carl. I have to call 911. You haven't heard about Darren and Trish?" Carl asked, cutting me off mid-sentence. A knot formed in my stomach while I took a slow breath before responding. "What about them?" I asked quietly so Darren wouldn't hear. I still get chills down my spine when I think of what Carl said. "Parker, they're both dead. They were murdered earlier this evening." I said nothing at first, and slowly turned back towards the kitchen. Although I couldn't see Darren from where I stood, I knew he was physically here in my home. "Carl, what are you talking about? They just got to my house a few minutes ago. I was literally staring at Darren in the face before you called." Carl was silent for a few seconds. I could hear him slowly breathing as he processed what I said. "Parker, the police found their bodies like 30 minutes ago. I can see cop lights and hear the commotion outside their house from my bedroom window. I just got back from the house. It's all marked off by police." "Is this one of your guys' messed up jokes?" I asked. "What are you talking about?" What sounded like a loud popping mixed with something metal striking a hard surface rang out from the kitchen, accompanied with frantic scurrying footsteps that quickly faded. Carl kept talking, but his voice sounded muffled and disoriented, becoming more of a background noise as I slowly lowered the phone and started creeping towards the kitchen. Something kept me from calling out to Darren when I re-entered the kitchen. I gasped in shock at what I saw. The noise I heard was my glass sliding door, which was now wide open. The frigid winter night air poured into the kitchen, and Darren was gone. The chair he'd been sitting in was turned over, and his clothes were in a sopping wet pile on the table. It took me a few seconds to realize it, but thrown on top of the chair was a leathery light beige blanket. I was originally more bewildered than anything else as I tried to make sense of the scene before me. That confusion turned into sheer, unfettered, stomach-churning terror as I continued staring at the beige, leathery blanket thrown across the chair, quickly realizing it was an entire hide of human skin. It was then I noticed two footprints comprised of a cloudy bluish-gray ooze-like substance. They were narrow, with pointed heels and three elongated toes that individually varied in length. The same bluish-gray substance made two peculiar prints along the wall next to it, and on the glass sliding door, depicting a triangular-shaped hand with five stubby pointed appendages. My heart started racing frantically, and I nearly succumbed to panic, until I heard Carl's voice repeatedly call my name, which was when I realized the phone was still in my hand. Shakily putting it back to my ear, Carl kept asking if I was still on the line. I initially struggled to respond, while trying to comprehend everything, my limbs shaking uncontrollably and the knottiness in my stomach becoming so intense I was on the verge of vomiting. "Carl?" I barely managed to utter, petrified to so much as move a muscle. "What happened to Darren and Trish tonight?" "They're dead," Carl replied in a somber, yet visibly unsettled tone. "A neighbor found them in the garage. Apparently, their bodies were completely skinned." I called the police soon after hanging up with Carl. The footprints led outside into the woods my backyard bordered. What disturbed me most was the police found a second set of identical footprints that originated from the side of my house next to the driveway. This other set of prints seemed to start from another full human skin hide, where police also found a bloodied pair of scissors and three knives. It was quickly determined the skin hides were indeed those of Darren and Trish. They never discovered who or what killed Darren and Trish, but I have some disturbing theories. It's clear who or whatever came to my house that night wasn't Darren. Something was literally wearing his skin that night. Something that I led into my house with open arms, even handed a knife and turned my back to, thinking nothing of it at the time. I don't know what creature or being was in my house that night, but I don't think it could stay in fluorescent light or warm temperatures for a long time. That must explain why whatever posed as Darren was so stiff, sweated so profusely, and kept looking at the ceiling. Maybe they could only wear a skin hide for a certain amount of time before needing to make a switch. I don't know, and I don't like dwelling about it, even after all these years. I can't even fathom what would have happened to me if I initially listened to what I thought was Darren, and went outside with it that night.
Kann eine Karriere neugierig sein? Komm zu EY und erlebe es selbst. Arbeite an spannenden Projekten, gestalte die Wirtschaft von morgen und entwickle dich auch selbst weiter. Im Team Assurance, Tax, Consulting oder EY Parthenon, Strategy and Transactions. Shape your future with confidence. Jetzt bewerben auf jobsgermany.ey.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.